Let's get back to the machine again, if we can. Can you describe what it looks like?
Yes, George. It would be about the size, I would say, well, here in the South, we used to use an old wash tub to wash our clothes with, so, or an old washing or washing machine would be a good description of it. And in the center of this washing machine, if you will, there's a cloverleaf design of iron. And around this iron, George, you're going to have like magnets wrapped in just thousands of miles of copper wire. Now, there's an old handle, like they used to crank the old trucks and cars in the 1920s.
Right.
There's a handle on top of this. And this is a circular, you would start it and rotate it like a watch face. You would roll this thing and it would circle. Now, Ed said as you put these magnets into motion, he said what happens is the North and the South Pole magnets start chasing each other. And once they start chasing each other, they never stop. Now, he would have a little copper wire there if he wanted to break the charge here, the connection. That's the only way, he said, you can stop it. Now, when he was talking about this machine, George, and there's parts of this machine that are missing. No one knows exactly what's happened over the years, but after he died, there was quite a bit of robbery that went on there. And they believe that a lot of the parts were missing, or they don't know exactly what happened. But this machine, he said, you could put this in the rocket, in the head of a rocket. He said you could fly to Pluto and have breakfast, come back to the Earth that night and have dinner, and you would have more energy than you used because of the magnetic energy.
Now, where was this machine physically located there?
Okay, physically. Now, Ed was living in a tower there. There's 240 tons of Carl Block stone. It looks like a square, if you will. And the top was his living quarters, and below it was his tool room. So this would have been right below where he actually lived. There would have been a Carl Block floor in between, like a two-story apartment, if you will. And, George, the last time I was there, I was thinking, and I don't know why it didn't dawn on me, but I looked up at the roof. The roof is flat now on this two-story apartment, if you can imagine it. And I thought, well, how did he put the blocks up there, you know, so that they don't fall on your head?
Right.
And I'm not
he had a system.
Yeah, I'm not a contractor, but I got to thinking, now, wait a minute. There's no steel rod enforcements up there, you know, like you would pour concrete. It's just blocks.
Now, the tripod that we have seen, the big picture of the tripod with Ed there,
right,
hoisting stuff, do you think that was used merely for balance and positioning once he did whatever he did to move the blocks?
Yeah, I think it's certainly possible that he used it for that method. You know, there's a lot of theories, of course, that now – the photographs that you see of Ed working is one of the curious things to me because, you know, George, as we talked last time, and this is verified by the people who knew him, he had a sixth sense. When you tried to sneak up on him working, he would always stop. And if he should be working and he was going to allow you to come up, he would go over and cover his tools before he would allow you to approach.
Right. Okay? See, I think this tripod picture is a diversion.
Well, yes, I think you're right, because now he had an old box Brownie camera with a self timer on it, okay? He took all his own photographs. That means that if he took these photographs, he took them himself, or if he allowed someone to take these photographs, and he's so secretive, why would he allow someone to photograph him when he was working if he didn't want this to be seen? So your idea on it's a diversion, then see, later on people would look at the photograph, and there was a lot of people who were fooled by this, and they'd say, well, my God, you can see him there in the photograph. He's working with a hoist and chain. He just did it with a pulley.
Yeah, exactly, without thinking about the weight and everything else that goes behind it.
Right, and his hoist was only for 10 tons, and his heaviest stone weighed 30. So where's the math?
So let's assume for a moment, Joe, that his magnetic machine is in full motion. I wonder if the fact that it was in there by the apartment, if it just generated some kind of a field around the entire area where everything became lighter than light, for example. So it really didn't matter if this machine had to be above a block or wherever it might be. Maybe he made the entire region that way.
Yes, and when you say made the entire region that way, that's entirely plausible, because if you're already working with a point that, you know, like we talked about before with the harmonic resonance or the harmonic grid there, you've already got a point that's got it there. So if you use something to enhance that point, then you can do the whole area. Like you say, you don't have to worry about one particular section because you just unify the whole section of the grid there.
Didn't he wear iron shoes or something like that?
Yes. You know, George, and this is, I told you when I was first studying this thing, I stopped by an old gas station there to ask some questions, and the gas station, the sign up over the station said J.T. Bullard. And I was like, this can't be. This was a station in 1930. Mr. Yeah. Bullard actually pulled up, and we began talking, and this is where I got a lot of the information, you know, for my story.
No and relation, huh?
No. Well, we're all related similarly, you know, because we all came from Ireland, Scotland, Britain,
right.
and all those places.
Okay.
But I had a lady named Sharon Bullard who emailed me. We talked last time about we'd love to dig up some people who were actually children when they watched these stones.
Right.
As we talked about being floated. Well, she said, my father-in-law was Bill Bullard. He was one of the sons or one of the children who was there and saw the stones being floated. Now, he reported that Ed wore iron soles on his shoes. And I said, why? And she said, well, they kept him from floating. In our last interview, you asked, you said, I can't believe he didn't float off from the whole place.
Right, right.
And now she said, well, he actually went to the shoemaker and had them put, they took car bumpers, believe it or not, from the junkyard and told the shoemaker to put iron soles on his shoes because he was tired of wearing the leather soles out. But she said there was a reason for it in that by wearing these iron soles, he was able to work in the area without floating away.
Now, that is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
But you see, George, he's so clever. When he goes to the shoemaker, he says, oh, I'm tired of wearing out my leather shoes.
Exactly. Yeah, he can't tell him why he wants them.
Right.